tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Well, we've rung the gong. We win the cigar. We know how to effect a soft landing on the moon, but not how to keep a sick kid out of jail. We know how to feed endless facts into our computers, but not how to solve our marriages. We know how to earn a living and how to run our machines, but not how to live successfully and happily. Why have we come to believe it's normal to live with abnormality? That crime is normal, that human failure and poverty is normal, that sickness and disease is normal, that living on the brink of fantastic warfare is normal. Just how far have we come in the not much more than two decades, going on toward three, since World War II, that worldwide destructive war that was fought to bring an end to all wars for all time? Well, we've had exactly 40 wars, more than that, since that time. It would surprise you if you were to see them all cataloged. More than 40. And the United States has been involved in most of that 40. And right now, today, we see wars, rumors of more wars, the threat of a massive land war in Asia, the escalation of the war in Vietnam, other wars threatening to crop up here and there around the world. And it seems as if it's almost natural to live in a time of the virtual threat of human extinction. The Secretary General of the United Nations asked the question, and he didn't answer it. He merely asked, "Uthant," he put it this way, "what element is lacking so that with all our skill and our knowledge, we still find ourselves in the dark valley of discord and enmity? What is it that inhibits us from going forward together to reap the fruits of human endeavor and the harvest of human experience?" And he said, "Why is it that for all of our professed ideals, our hopes, our skills, peace on earth is still a distant objective, seen only dimly through the storms and the turmoils of our present difficulties? We don't seem to know the way to peace. And the average person doesn't know the way to peace of mind, to an absence of the heartache, the frustrations and the turmoils, the difficulties that beset his own private environment, any more than we seem to know the way to peace in our big cities, any more than we seem to know the way to peace among and between nations or between races. What is it," I reflect upon Uthant's words, "that is lacking? What element is really lacking that after all of these struggles from time immemorial to achieve world peace, we still don't have it?" I want to quote the words of General Douglas MacArthur, the late Douglas MacArthur. This was after he had been relieved of his command in Korea under the Truman administration. Before the assembled Congress of the United States, he quoted these now very famous words. He said, "I know war as few other men now living know it, and nothing to me is more revolting." He said, "Men since the beginning of time have sought peace, military alliances, balances of power, leagues of nations, all in turn failed, leaving the only path to be by the way of the crucible of war." He said the utter destructiveness of war now blocks this alternative, and he said these shocking words, and this was years ago, "We have had our last chance. If we will not devise some greater and more equitable system, our Armageddon will be at our door." And then he went on to say, "The problem is basically theological and involves a spirit of recrudescence and improvement of human character that will synchronize with our almost matchless advances in science, art, literature, and all the material and cultural developments of the past 2,000 years. He said, "It must be of the spirit if we are to save the flesh." Now, I said that human nature is criminal, and I insist that I am able to prove that to you. But first I want to tell you what some of the world's greatest minds are saying about the real problem of today, about the problems that we increasingly are labeling insoluble, the problems that are so deeply divisive among humankind in general, the problems that impede our progress toward a world of law, a world of peace, as former President Eisenhower called it, with justice. A Washington, D.C. scientist, Dr. Robert M. Page, said several years ago, scientists cannot change human nature, and until human nature is changed, we will have war. The age of peace, he said, will come when mankind turns wholeheartedly to God. He's a scientist saying this. In complete humility and voluntary unconditional surrender. Now, I know that other scientists, Dr. Urey and so on, would take issue with that, because when asked recently in a conference about cosmology, as to whether or not theology or religion had any part in the study of cosmology, about the origin of the universe, the solar system, Earth, life upon it, the development, which they like to call the evolution, of human beings, as to whether religion had a place in this, he said, no, certainly not. He admitted the universe is absolutely fathomless, but he said, why introduce the subject of religion into it? Well, Dr. Robert Page said, for what it's worth to you, that unless human nature is changed, we shall continue to have war. Now, Albert Einstein said concerning the foremost problem haunting mankind today, I quote his words, the real problem is in the hearts and minds of men. It is easier to denature plutonium than to denature the evil spirit of man. Man's skills have outstripped his morals. His engineering has leapt ahead of his wisdom. Is the basic problem human nature? Let's come to understand what is human nature. Human nature, as I asserted on a recent program, and again, you can prove this. You can prove it by philosophy, by logic, by practical, pragmatic experience. You can prove it by history. You can prove it in another method that few people know very much about, and that is by going to the one book that is the source of foundational, beginning, elementary knowledge about human nature, which is the Bible. A lot of people like to hide their eyes from that, but if you have some glandular reaction when I mention the Bible, then that's your problem, not mine. And the chances are, you might have an emotion or a reaction about the Bible, but you've never read it. You've never studied it. You don't know very much about it, and yet you have a reaction to the Bible. I remember so well a letter I got one time where I think I had quoted a statement out of the Moffat version. It shows you what some people know about the Bible. It was out of a modern translation of the Bible by James Moffat in modern English. And an elderly grandmother lady took me to real task over this. She said, look, she said, if the King James Bible was good enough for the apostles, it's good enough for me. Well, it kind of leaves you hanging, but you have to realize that a lot of people have emotional reactions and glandular emotions, as I've said, about the Bible. I tell you, the Bible is a book that reveals to you the very makeup, the origin of, the basic beginning building blocks of human nature, and tells you exactly why it is the way it is and tells you how it can be changed. Now, I can prove that to you in some literature I will offer. But let's go on to give you what some of the leading scientists and the big thinkers on the world scene today are telling us, because after all, the world is what its leaders make it. And the leaders of the world are the educated, the scientists, the great industrialists, the government leaders, the military minds, and the like. This is what they say about it. Of course, they don't always agree. But here is an insert from an article in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, what one scientist said, can human nature be changed? Those who are concerned about the lack of wisdom with which scientific advances have often been exploited may be relieved to know that brain researchers don't know how to change human nature. Who can change the hearts of men? That is the question. They know that it must be changed. They know that you've got to change this basic ingredient of human nature that, first of all, is vanity. All is vanity, said a great philosopher of yesteryear, and into that fits jealousy, lust, and greed. These are the basic elements of human nature. Witness a little sweet, gurgling baby child that is born, and I'm going to tell you now that human nature is criminal, that human nature by itself is a crime. As I said, there ought to be a law against human nature, and there is. There's a law against human nature. There's a law that states human nature ought to be changed. There is a law that shows you exactly how to change human nature. But witness a little child, the absolute perfect expression of vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed, of selfishness without bounds, of vanity to the ethereal, limitless reaches of the universe. Unless taught not to do these things, a child will grow up naturally grasping, stealing, seizing from others. A child will grow up utterly oblivious to the likes, dislikes, desires, requirements, or necessities of others. A child is born dirty, sweet, and yours, oh yes, but dirty nevertheless. He's a dirty little creature that doesn't even know how to clean himself up, and his mother has to take care of that part of it for him. There's a reason for that, because education is what you learn and you experience from the time you are born until the time you die, not something you get out of a book or something you go to school to pay for. Education consists of much more than that. But human nature in its basic elements, I have said, is vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed. Little children, unless they're taught not to, will kick, cudgel, cut, injure, bruise, like as not burn one another. They will grasp and steal from one another. They will lie to their parents and to one another. They will live in a fantasy land, a dreamland of make-believe, of lies, of half-truths, of hidden assertions, of unclear, poorly thought-out, vague, fluff-fluff vanity of a childlike mind. Unless they are taught to think otherwise, they will continue doing this. Human nature is not, in its basic elements, good. Human nature wants to be thought of as being good, but it doesn't want to live in a way that is good. Now we get into a lot of questions about what is good and what's bad. And people say, you can't know what is good and what is bad. Well, I'll tell you one thing. War is bad. Human suffering is bad. Broken homes are bad. Mounting crime and the stench of moral decay is bad. Sickness and disease are bad. Automobile accidents are bad. And these are all the result of human nature, of unbridled, rampant, uncontrollable, ungovernable human nature that you can't depend upon from one moment to the next. Human nature that in its basic elements is vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed, and that is criminal and must be restrained. Now, people have liberty a little backward. A lot of people look upon law as if law is restrictive and that liberty grants great freedoms and privilege to do whatever you want to do, to whom you want to do it, when you get good and ready to do it. They have it a little backward. Many people envision law as a kind of a mental or emotional or moral straitjacket. It's nothing of the kind. Law is great freedom. You see, law is what guarantees your freedom. When you pay your taxes, when you obey the traffic laws, when you obey the state, the county, the federal laws, then you are guaranteeing that you still have preserved and protected for you, and by force of arms, if necessary, from the depredations of others, your own freedoms, which are guaranteed. It's your birthright, but we get a little mixed up on that. It is yours by right of birth. Now let's think about it. You cannot earn that birthright of living in a free country. It is yours by virtue of being born. You do nothing to earn it, and yet you are free. Now today, in our preoccupation with rights, with what is your right and what is not your right. Increasingly, we see people a little confused about what is right and what is wrong. And in taking their rights, in grasping for and in seizing their rights, many people are blatantly and militantly trampling all over the rights of others. Freedom is the freedom and the privilege of exercising those magnificent and precious freedoms of yours so long as they do not encroach upon or deny that same privilege to other people. And so long as they are within the bounds of law, which after all, instead of being a moral straitjacket, is the definition of your liberty, is the defining of how far your liberty extends. Now in our Western culture of today, in our vaunted Western technological society of these magnificent freedoms that we enjoy, increasingly people are abusing that birthright. We don't seem to realize that while birthright, the privilege of the freedoms that we enjoy, is something we cannot earn, that we cannot rise to, that we have by virtue of being born free, as the song goes, in this Western culture of ours, that we can disqualify ourselves, that we can, by breaking of the laws which preserve and protect those freedoms, have them removed from us and become very much undeserving of them. Are we becoming undeserving of the freedoms that we enjoy, the blessings and the benefits of this free land by our actions? I'm not talking about some international issue. I'm talking about our own personal human nature. I'm talking of our selfishness, our vanity, our lust, and our greed. I'm talking of our bigotry, our bias, our hatreds, our racism, our glandular reactions to whether it's religion or government or race, our preoccupation with violence and criminality, our glutted, selfish desire to wallow in a sloppy cesspool of our own immorality and dress it up in a tuxedo and call it new morality when there's nothing new about it at all. It's returning to the savagery of the jungle of ancient times. There's nothing new about the so-called catchphrase new morality. It's as ancient as Adam and Eve in the garden. It's as ancient as what Cain did. It's about as old as you could possibly get. The philosophers are agreed. You've got to change human nature. And until human nature is changed, we have had it. Now, to show you how wildly out of touch with reality some people can become, several years ago, a woman president of a prominent civic organization said this, quote, "I don't see anything but good times ahead," she said. "The brotherhood of man's spirit will prevail," she said. And one of her co-workers said this, "No matter what catastrophes lie ahead, man will survive because of his basic, finer qualities." Human nature does not change through the years, she said, and whether our heads will be larger or our legs shorter, 100 or even 1,000 years from now, she said, our hearts will remain the same. Oh, I sure hope not. I sure hope not, because if that's true, my friends, if our hearts are going to remain the same for the next 100 years, then we've all had it. We really have. There's no use kidding ourselves. We've had it. These men that say this mean exactly what they say, and they mean it. They've already analyzed it. The philosophers can tell you precisely that world government is the only solution, that man is the most irrational creature there is, that he's the most ungainly, ungovernable, uncontrollable, irresponsible, law-defying creature that there is, that man himself with his own basic nature is the problem. That war is caused by human nature. And so long as you have human nature, you're going to have war. But as General MacArthur said, war is now untenable. It's unacceptable. It's impossible to contemplate. War today means the utter destructiveness of all of humankind. Now, we've been called the unfinished animal. There's something lacking. That's what Uthant asked. He said, what element is lacking? There's something lacking in human nature. I'll tell you what's lacking in human nature. Innate selflessness is lacking. An outgoing concern for others is lacking. Long-suffering and mercy is lacking. A feeling of real brotherhood and love is absolutely lacking. As much as we like to say that we're good and we like to look at man as being a very laudable and praiseworthy animal, he's not an animal, we need to understand that. But I'll tell you this, there's a great deal lacking in the human heart. And what is lacking is the real brotherhood that we talk about. So long as the colored people in the United States and elsewhere still talk about Uncle Charlie, and the white people talk about the niggers, and so long as people still tell the same jokes, and so long as people still have the same attitude of heart, and so long as people say, sure, we want to integrate, but we're not going to do much more beyond that, and they take issue with this and that and the other aspect of civil government or civil rights, and we get glandular and we get violent about it, human nature remains the same. And people are not changing inside. We're trying to change our material environment. We're trying to increase the number of mechanical gleaming gadgets and toys that make our lives more comfortable. We're trying to achieve or to acquire more material possessions. We're trying to obtain great breakthroughs in military science or in technology. We're trying to put a man on the moon. But we still haven't found the solution to the deeply divisive problems of the human race. We still haven't found, as I said at the outset of this program, a method to solve our marital problems and to keep our teenagers out of jail. We still haven't found a method to avoid racial conflict and virtual race wars. We haven't solved the population explosion. We haven't found a way to peace. Jesus of Nazareth said, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." Take a look at our nation. Ask yourself, is it going to remain? Is it going to stand? A house divided against itself cannot stand. And we today are so bitterly divided against ourselves, you begin to wonder. Now, most people, even inside their own minds and lives, are divided against themselves. They will tell you they're not sure what is right and what is wrong, and what is moral and what is immoral. price-rigging executives will tell you, sure, they got up the management ladder by trampling all over somebody else, and furthermore, they would do it again. Cheating college students say, sure, we cheat, because cheating is only something that you do as an expedience because everybody else does it, and we think the only problem with it is getting caught. The housewife, who wasn't pregnant when she came in the store, but was when she went out, what it was a turkey, Thanksgiving time, this happens all the time, says, well, of course I shoplift because, after all, the stores are gouging me on the trading stamp business and making me pay for somebody else leaving the shopping cart away and rising prices and I can't afford it, and besides, the world owes me a living. We've got all these watered-down excuses, the 10 new commandments of do it unto others before they do it unto you. We are a house divided against ourselves, and unless we change, we shall not stand. It's about time we got the warning. It's about time we heard the message. We're no further advanced today than at the very dawn and the beginning of all human history. The only reason you should record any history is to learn from man's past mistakes. But the League of Nations failed. How are we doing in the United Nations? How far have we come from the utter destructiveness of World War II along the road to peace today? How close are we to peace? That chessboard of human nature. You can hear all of these swan songs and all of these obnoxious ideas of the basic good, but where do you see it? Now, you think I'm some cynic that has no solutions? Oh, no, far from it. I've got some solutions to tell you about, because human nature can be changed, and it will be changed. And it is against the law. It really is, because there is a law against human nature. There were two philosophers, I want to tell you a rather humorous story, that were trying to decide whether or not man would survive. And the one had the idea of these women that I told you about. The other had the idea of most of the philosophers of the world today. The human nature and its basic elements is of such ungovernable behavior that there is no solution short of human extinction, and that perhaps the few survivors will then fight over the dwindling means of survival and sort of start another society all over again. This is the thought that a lot of people have. Well, these two philosophers have been talking way late into the night or early into the morning, chatting amicably in their study, talking about human nature. And the one insisted that man would be saved because of his basic good qualities, and another insisted that man would perish because of his unstable, easily imbalanced nature. And so to support his case, this second fellow asserted that he could cause a perfectly tranquil, comfortable, total stranger in peace and serenity, anger, annoyance, and complete frustration all within a few moments. And so to illustrate his point, he, at about 2:30 in the morning, grabbed a telephone book, and he paged through it real quickly, and he came to a name that he picked at random, and he says, I'm going to show you what I'm talking about. He's British, I think. And so he rang the telephone number, and he said, hello, is Higginbottom there? Sleepy voice at the other end of the line says, oh, no, you got the wrong number. Clang, he hung up the receiver. So the philosopher smiled, trying to show the ungovernable qualities of human nature. He said, watch, and he called right back, the same number. This time it only rang about half of one time. It was snatched off the cradle, and somebody says, hello. And he says, hello, I say, is Higginbottom there? And the guy on the other end of the line says, what are you, some kind of a nut or something? I keep trying to tell you that you got the wrong number, and slam went the receiver on the cradle. Bemused, he smiled and twirled his mustache, and he says, now watch this. And so he dialed the same number again, and this time it was jerked off the cradle, and the fellow says, hello! He disguised his voice, and he says, hello, my name is Higginbottom. Have there been any calls for me? Now, you know, maybe we can laugh at our nature, and I imagine that fellow just nearly, he must have jerked his telephone clear off the wall. But this is a rather humorous illustration of what can happen, whether it's waiting in line and somebody gets ahead of you, whether it is somebody who takes exception to the color of your face, whether it's somebody who steals from you or drives across your pansy bed or dodges in front of you in an automobile bumper-to-bumper lineup. Human nature is uncontrollable and ungovernable today. And I tell you that in the words of the great statesmen, the philosophers, the men in the think factories, the intelligentsia of government, of education, and of the military, they will almost as if with one voice tell you that unless human nature is changed, we shall have wars, ever increasing, ever more prolific wars, ever more destructive wars, and that the very salvation of mankind as a living human creature is at stake. Unless human nature can be changed. It can be. There's a way. Human nature has a vast potential for good, a vast capacity for good, but only through a definite mode and method of change. And it's about time you found out what that method is, that there are chances for human survival, that human nature can be altered, it can be changed, that vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed can be suppressed and put down, and that in their place love and outgoing concern and true brotherhood and mercy and long-suffering and kindness and the elements that would lead to peace can be substituted in their place, but only through a miraculous change. It's about time you found out what is human nature, and I have a book that will tell you precisely that. Why is it we can effect soft landings on the moon, but we don't know what we are? We don't know why we're here and where we're going? Why do you live? Why have you been born? Why do you exist? I have a book that by that very title that I can send you by return mail free of charge. Why were you born? Why do you draw breath? Why are you on the earth? What is this thing called human nature? What is the human animal as we speak of him? And he's not an animal, as that book that will show you. And the vast capacity for a human being has never been realized by most people. You haven't investigated. Let's face it. You've never read a booklet by the title, Why Were You Born? You've never perhaps seen anywhere you could go for the answer. You've thought about it. You've wondered, what am I doing here? Why am I alive? But you don't know where to go to get the answer. This book would also answer the questions on, if there is a God, why would he allow human suffering? Why does he allow crime and violence? Now, the answers are obtained in another booklet that is in full color, that's also free of charge, that show you, by taking a calm look at the Western world, at all the world, at world conditions today, at all the problems, and then showing you what the solutions are in the minds of world leaders and what the real solutions will be. It's filled with good news. It's encouraging. And it's entitled, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. It's the booklet that will tell you more than anything else I can give you about this broadcast, what I'm all about, what this program is about, what we're trying to do. It's free of charge. There's no price for it. Now, the Plain Truth magazine is absolutely unique in that every single month we'll give you articles straight from the shoulder telling you exactly what is wrong with world conditions and what are the real solutions. In the current number, this article on the tragedy of our polluted planet. Almost unbelievable pictures of incredible pollution, and what are the real solutions? Air, water, and food. This article takes issue with that and shows you what Bible prophecy says will be done to solve the problem. Now, also in this current number, the article on Be a Loving King in Your Family Kingdom. Here's a vital article on our series of personal development, the way to joy, to happiness and stability in the home. An article that ties directly in with what I've told you on this broadcast about divorce. And about how to have a happy marriage. And also every number, the letters to the editor section from around the world written from our readers in New Zealand, like as not in South Africa, Canada, in Europe, and around the world. And every single month, the story for the children, the Bible story, for children from 9 to 109, prophecy comes alive in today's world news, showing you the real meaning of world conditions as no other magazine can, and showing you what will occur in the future. And remember, it's absolutely free of charge and full, beautiful color throughout. A quality magazine. No one's going to call on you. It's free of charge and no price if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. And so until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.